it's my pleasure to be here to announce our enforcement priorities for 2026 and to provide you with a report on the work that we've done in 2025. But before I do that, I want to start with a reflection about ASIC's enforcement posture. Because we're often asked, why does ASIC need to take a strong enforcement approach? And the suggestion seems to be that we should rather call out the issue of concern, allow the firm involved to remedy it, and avoid the cost and the uncertainty of court-based litigation. Apart from the obvious answer that we are not, and we never will be, the compliance arm of large corporations, the following example is telling. So ASIC commissioners are frequently the guests around board tables where we engage with directors and senior executives about the important work that we do. And at one such recent engagement, I mentioned a pricing promises case that ASIC had taken against the insurer RACQ back in 2023. RACQ had ultimately admitted to this misconduct, which involved misleading documents being sent on millions of occasions to about 500,000 of RACQ's customers. They had collectively missed out on some $86 million worth of discounts. A significant penalty was imposed and there was widespread media attention. A woman at the board table was a former senior executive of another insurer. While that insurer had long been aware of pricing promises issues and the potential for problems of its own, until that point, those problems had been secondary. Following the ASIC court action, she told us, the focus changed overnight. There was an immediate review of all pricing promises and widespread irregularities were discovered. What was interesting to me about this anecdote and this swift reprioritisation was the broader industry context. The sector was well on notice of ASIC's concerns about this issue, and there was already wide-scale remediation in place. Despite those facts, it was only court action that prompted this insurer to review, reprioritise and remediate, and therein lies the power of enforcement. As an aside, there's much written at present, and we've heard a lot about it in the last day or so, about improving productivity through better or simpler regulation and by reducing regulatory burden. Of course, we strongly support those efforts at ASIC, and we have our own simplification work well underway. But I have heard suggestion in some quarters that this focus must necessarily imply some reduction in enforcement. We don't accept that to be the case. Strong and active corporate law enforcement means the rules of the game are clear, the playing field is level, and those that break the law are held to account. All of these are critical for consumer trust, for confidence, and properly functioning markets, and they are essential elements for productivity improvement. Reflecting on last year, some clear themes emerge. Despite much talk of regulatory complexity, overload, the uncertainty of AI and technology advances, it's not compliance failures in these emerging and complex areas that we most frequently see problems. It's rather the basics, like getting right the interest rate that you promised your customers, or not misleading them about premium renewal increases. And we're frequently told by those firms that we investigate that compliance matters. And there are teams of compliance professionals employed in all these institutions to avoid the very conduct failures that we observe. So when I was thinking about these issues in preparing for today, two cases came to mind. The first, from many years ago, the Visy cardboard box cartel, where in response to Visy's reliance on its voluminous trade practices compliance manual, the judge wryly observed that that manual might well have been written in Sanskrit for all the notice anybody took of it. The second matter is much more recent. You'll no doubt be aware that ASIC has recently filed several sets of proceedings against ANZ. Now, those matters are all now before the court, and I'll be necessarily circumspect in my remarks. For present purposes, though, all I need to say is that in relation to one of those matters, ANZ has admitted serious misconduct, indeed unconscionable conduct, in relation to the manner of trading in its role as duration manager for a significant bond issuance. So where, you might ask, were the compliance professionals at the time of this trading? Well, in facts admitted by ANZ, they were in the trading room, and none of those representatives raised concerns about the conduct, and nor was any record made of contravention of ANZ's own policies. So what both these examples suggest is the importance of substance over form. It doesn't matter if there's a thick compliance manual, if no one pays it any attention, and it doesn't matter if your compliance professionals are in the room, if poor conduct and breaches of company policy are not immediately called out. And just picking up on one of Mike Burgess's observations of yesterday when he was talking about cyber, it doesn't matter if you're recording all the logins if no one's reading the logs. Turning then to 2025, before I do, I just want to reflect briefly on why we set enforcement priorities in the first place. I've talked about this before at this forum, and I'll touch again on it briefly. Firstly, enforcement priorities give transparency. Secondly, they give clarity for our case selection and resource allocation. And third, we find those priorities have a deterrent effect in those areas in and of itself. But finally, and importantly, it holds us to account. Have we done what we said we would do? So within that framework, let me talk to some of our recent work. Subject to upcoming court decisions, we will likely see more civil penalties imposed in 2025 than ever before, together with the longest term of imprisonment imposed following an ASIC investigation. Our enforcement momentum has continued to accelerate. We have more investigations, more actions, and stronger outcomes, and we are delivering timely, visible, and deterrence-driven enforcement. We have worked hard to increase our investigation numbers with an aim to consider more matters, review them more quickly, and if there is no further work for us to do, to close them promptly to allow resources to move elsewhere. Turning to our 2025 priority areas, I'm going to talk about two where we have seen, most unfortunately, some convergence, and those are the areas of misconduct exploiting superannuation savings and high-risk property investment. Our work in relation to the failures of the Shield and First Guardian Master Funds has been extensively dealt with elsewhere. But in reflecting on this year gone by, it is important that I recognise the tireless work of our ASIC investigators to execute warrants, freeze assets, obtain restraint orders, ban advisors, cancel licences, liaise with investors and commence the important work of holding those responsible to account for the catastrophic investor outcomes we've seen associated with these funds. Those involved extend to financial advisors and their licensees, lead generators, super trustees, auditors, research houses, and of course, at the very heart of this misconduct, those responsible entities of the failed funds themselves. We already have had some 45 individual court appearances, and there remains much work to do. We have instituted proceedings against Macquarie and Equity trustees, and I can let you know today that we have now commenced proceedings against SQM Research for preparing reports and publishing favourable ratings for Shield, and this is the first time ASIC has taken action against a research house. We've taken action against Interprac Financial Planning for allegedly exposing thousands of Australians to poor financial advice before they invested some $670 million of superannuation into these funds. And we are seeking leave to commence proceedings against MWL Financial Services, a former director of it, and Imperial Capital Group, a lead generator for allegedly operating a scheme that resulted in hundreds of clients investing in Shield. This means we've now got 10 separate court proceedings in the federal court against some 18 defendants, and we have more to come. We won't rest until our work on these matters is complete and that those responsible have been held to account. One of our enforcement priorities for next year is therefore to continue our work to hold those responsible to account for the failure of the Shield and First Guardian funds. Our broader superannuation focus this year has been member services failures, and these failures take many forms. This year we've seen Australian Super, trustee of our largest fund, pay a $27 million penalty for failing to merge multiple member accounts. We also sued Australian Super and separately CBUS over what we allege to be the delayed processing of thousands of death benefit claims. And despite these outcomes and many more in this area, there remains work to do. In 2026, we are continuing our work to hold trustees to account for member services failures. Turning to insurance, this year we prioritised our work in terms of failures by insurers to deal fairly and in good faith with their customers. We took RACQ to court for sending thousands of customers renewal notices containing what we allege to be misleading comparison pricing. We took action against Hollard Insurance in relation to a claim that took more than 3 years to resolve, and we've taken action against Choosy, alleging that it falsely represented comparing products from a range of insurers when, in fact, in all but one instance, it compared policies from just a single insurer, thus providing consumers of choice. In the current environment, with premiums ever increasing and insurance increasingly out of reach, we will continue our focus on this sector and this year particularly look at claims and complaint handling failures. Turning to credit, the protection of financially vulnerable consumers is an enduring enforcement priority. And this year we focused on business models designed to avoid consumer credit protections, with continued work to defeat full court and high court appeals from various Signo entities, again, and court actions taken against Swoosh and Rent for Keeps. Also in this category, those of you with teenage children may have endured, as I did, the travails of Married at First Sight earlier in the year. If you did so, you would have also seen the bombardment of advertising by credit provider Snaffle, branding itself as the home of bite-sized payments. Far from bite-sized, we allege that Snaffle inflated prices, charged for delivery fees never incurred, and overcharged its customers. Court proceedings were filed in May. We also introduced a new priority last year relating to debt management and debt collection and took proceedings against Cash & Go, alleging unconscionable debt recovery practices, unfair contract terms, and the failure to provide compliant default notices to thousands of its customers. We will continue our focus, for self-evident reasons, on misconduct that exploits consumers who face financial difficulty, including predatory credit practices. Turning to greenwashing, we this year bring to conclusion our intense focus in this area, with a penalty imposed on Active Super for misleading ESG representations and new proceedings against Fiducian Investment Management Services. We've now secured a number of important decisions in this area and hope we have sent a clear message that promises to investors about where their funds will be directed must be honoured. While greenwashing is not an express enforcement priority for 2026, we will of course remain alert to the risk of serious instances of misleading and deceptive conduct in this area. Now turning to cyber, as we heard from the Director General yesterday, cyber security is a pressing issue for all of us. A priority for ASIC this year has been licensee failures to have adequate cyber security protections, given the significant sensitive and confidential information they hold. We've taken court action against financial advice business Fortnum Private Wealth and separately against FIG Securities, alleging failures to properly manage and mitigate cybersecurity risks. Now turning to auditors, another priority of this year. Auditors are an important financial system participant. They have a protective role given their unique position to identify and limit misconduct, and their failure to meet required standards can have serious market consequences. This year has seen the CADB, following ASIC investigations, make determinations concerning auditors of iSignThis, of Greensill, of United Global Capital, and the auditor of Bright Advisors, surrendering their registration and undertaking to us never to reapply. While we've made progress in this area, we consider there remains work to do, and auditor misconduct will remain a priority next year. Insider trading, we also identified the strengthening of our investigation and prosecution of insider trading as an important focus for 2025. These crimes impact all Australians' share market and super fund investments, and we stood up a specialist team to focus solely on that issue. One notable outcome this year were the charges laid against former investment manager Rodney Forrest for trading and procuring others to trade in Platinum Asset Management shares while in possession of inside information. Mr. Forrest's guilty plea was an important first outcome of this team. Now, we are internationally known in Australia for our clean market. We're determined to keep it that way, and the work of our specialist insider trading team will continue next year. While our annual enforcement priorities have a significant role to play, there is some misconduct that causes such significant harm, we will always elevate it for attention. One enduring priority is misconduct that damages market integrity, including market manipulation, breaches of continuous disclosure and corporate governance failures. We've taken cases this year against Delta Power and Energy, alleging manipulation of the ASX 24 market for electricity futures, and we've seen a significant penalty, $3.88 million, imposed on Société Générale Securities Australia for failures in the same area. In continuous disclosure, we've seen iSignThis ordered to pay $10 million for deliberate acts of non-disclosure and providing false and misleading information to the ASX, and we've taken proceedings against Rex and the West Australian Wiluna Gold Mining Company, also alleging breaches of disclosure obligations. And that brings me to a question sometimes that we get about our corporate governance enforcement. How do we make decisions about joining individuals? It's increasingly clear to us that the public expects that individuals in senior corporate positions will be held to account for the misconduct of their organisation. And this year we saw the former managing director and CEO of iSignThis penalised $1 million in his personal capacity and disqualified for 6 years from managing corporations, and a director of Open for Sale Global fined $2 million, close to a record penalty for an individual, for what the court called a disgraceful course of conduct. But the most significant enforcement outcomes for misconduct is the referral of a brief for criminal prosecution, and this year has seen a number of important outcomes that should deter those who seek to profit from fraud and criminal misconduct. Most significantly, Perth fraudster Chris Marco was sentenced, finally, to 14 years in prison with 12 years non-parole for offences resulting in the loss of $34 million to investors. Now, that was the highest penalty, highest sentence imposed by an Australian court following an ASIC investigation and the conclusion of an enormous amount of work, rigorous and thorough work, done by our investigators and our legal teams. Turning quickly to 2026, I've already mentioned a number of those priorities we will continue next year. But in addition to those, it will surprise no one, following Joe's address to the press club last week, that we are elevating our enforcement work on poor private credit practices. This new priority should send a message to this rapidly expanding sector to get its governance right. It comes on the back of our recent private credit fund surveillance report that highlights significant room for improvement, and indeed the Shield and First Guardian schemes are examples of private credit fund models. We're also increasing the spotlight on financial reporting misconduct, including failures to lodge financial reports. Financial reports provide shareholders, creditors, and the public with important information to enable them to make informed decisions. We've launched a surveillance focusing on this area, and we expect to complete this next year. And we also want to recognise small business as the lifeblood of our economy, and we know that small business owners are frustrated when directors of other businesses are not properly held to account for evading small business creditors and failing to pay their bills. We previously sought to work on these issues but recognised the work to be done. We're tasking two additional enforcement teams to look more closely at these issues and to further deliver on a priority focus of unlawful practices that evade small business creditors. I'll conclude this list where I started, with consumers. Whether it be big banks, insurance companies, super trustees or credit providers, we will continue a focus in 2026 on misleading pricing practices that impact cost of living for Australians. So what should you take from all of this? I'll leave you with these summaries. First, we are an extremely active enforcement agency. Second, we do what we say we are going to do. Third, we will continue to prioritise systemic compliance failures by large institutions. Fourth, we have an active criminal investigation program and we are determined to see through complex and resource-intensive investigations to their end. And finally, our commitment to enforcement, where necessary and appropriate, is unwavering. We will continue to hold companies and individuals to account to drive productivity and create a level playing field for us all. Thank you.